Blog Talk Radio.
Maybe I should unmute myself. Oh my God! Look, Rex, that was definitely. It doesn't get any better than that, right? First thing, right out of the gate, here I am.
Hey, gotta get it out of the way.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, everybody, thank God it's Friday. That's what I can say, because those are the nights when all kinds of disasters are supposed to happen, so we can figure them out and work together as a group. Just so everyone knows, apparently, all poetry is not working. We can't send any messages to anyone, or at least I cannot, and neither is anyone else I've spoken to. So here's the deal. For the show tonight, at the bottom of our topic board for the list of poetry, you have the link for the show, which means you can listen. It has the, what's the other thing? There's another thing. Last but not least, there's a link there to bring you to a chat room where we can post links back and forth, and you can follow along with us. And you can also chat in there and give your opinions on the poetry and what have you. And I'm sorry it's a little confusing, but Pam partied so freaking hard for her birthday last night, she broke them. So go figure, you know. That's just what happened. So, you know, that's the way it is. So what do you do? Anyway, is going to be an adventure. And for, just so everyone's aware, if you go into the topic board, if I post links in the chat room, you're not going to be able to just click it like the regular links that went, like we normally do. But I'm going to run them from top to bottom. I'm going to try not to vary on that theme. If there's ever a doubt, you can look into the chat, see what poem we're posting, and you can click on the link in the topic board because they are working. So that's the best I can do for tonight. So, hey, we're going to give this a whirl. Oh, hi, Rex. Hi, Pam. Welcome to the party.
Hello, hello, hello. And thank God it's bloody Friday. Is it the 13th?
Is it the 13th?
You broke your hand?
What?
Yeah. Are you happy you broke it?
Can you guys hear me?
No.
Oh, smart ass. I thought maybe you couldn't hear me.
We can't.
I can hear you fine. I asked you a question, so not a big deal. Okay, well, I see the two of you are in there, so that's a good thing. I also have another caller on the line, so let me answer this. I'm not exactly sure who it is, so forgive me. I don't know the area code. Hello, area code 630. Who's calling, please?
Yeah, this is Colin, guys. I've called before.
Hey, Colin. How are you tonight?
Good, how are you?
I can. Did you hear my spiel on how things are broken?
I did. I think so.
Okay.
I'm on the Phil Eyes of Poetry like website.
Right.
Sorry if
right.
I heard a motor behind me. I'm outside.
Actually, all poetry in general is having issues.
Okay.
So, I mean, unless you can post in the room, if you can, that's cool, but we can't. So if you click on our topic board for tonight, that'll give you a list of all the poems, you know, where you posted your poem. And at the bottom of that, there's a chat link that you can click on, and we can kind of communicate a little bit that way. So that's the best I can do to help us all out. Could be interesting. Absolutely. And with that being said, since we're already at a disadvantage here, I think I'm going to get the party started a little quicker than normal. And Rex, I'm going to ask you to start us off with the top piece on the board.
The Carpenter Kid by Jack Tomkovich.
I'm sorry, I had a crazy message. I'm going to put that up, and the first piece is by Jack Tomkovich. So if you want to access the link, you have to hit it in the topic board. That's the best I can. It says everybody's going at the little chat. So, okay. So this is called The Carpenter's Kid by Jack Tomkovich.
Neo-surrealistic realism. Can a poet on the planet deconstruct that gibberish? Life plus 33 years, said the Jewish guy from Nazareth. Carpenter's kid, darned if he ever built a solid table without a shim. Cabinet he made fell off the hook and broke. My wife's mom's pottery, she's saying, don't hang wallpaper in a house he crafted. Cried for 3 days, but planted roses for the scent. Still write poems, not clear how rocky the road or how steep the climb. Ideas are comets flexing across the sky. All we can do is grab a few as they go by. And poem. Pam, why don't we start with you?
Absolutely. I like the short lines and the flow to this. A really beautiful look at the artist within all of us, including, you know, poets, including Christ himself, who was, you know, a carpenter as a young child, or his father was a carpenter. And cabinet he made far off the hook and broke, fell off the hook and broke. My wife's mom's pottery just saying, don't hang wallpaper in a house he crafted, cried for 3 days, but planted roses for the scent. I thought this was just some really, you know, fun, creative imagery that took a look at everyday objects in a different way. So really intriguing and very well done.
Thank you, Dan. And Colin, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this was interesting. It's the first time I saw it. I just saw it just now, so I'm a bit fresh to the poem. But it struck me as being this, reducing things to the pedestrian imagery of carpentry and the manifest or tactile, material imagery of everyday life, and then connecting that back to the kind of metaphysical nature of Christ and the 3-day, the resurrection and all these other issues. So it's interesting. There's a lot to unpack here, and it's extremely subtle and compelling, and I really like this approach, and I just have to sit down and look at it a little more, but I'm fascinated by it. I think it's very interesting, and I really enjoyed it.
Excellent. Thank you, Colin. Gene, how about you?
I found this to be really intriguing, right? And I'm sure it's all about the neo-surrealistic realism take on the whole thing. And I think that there's many points to ponder throughout. And I thought it was well done. And I thank Jack for the share. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I like that opening, especially. I'm sorry, you got more? All right. I interrupted.
No. I was done. Thank you.
Oh, I do like that, the neo-surrealistic realism, and then the question that follows. Can a poet on the planet deconstruct that gibberish? Now, there's a nice touch to the sort of, if you don't understand the language or its relativity, yes, it does come across as the gibberish, and most people will look at it as, who puts this crap together? Because you know what? That really does not make a whole lot of sense. Until you look into it from that off-the-edge viewpoint, so to speak, life plus 33 years for the Jewish guy from Nazareth. There's that notion of life plus. So you got the 33 years given, plus afterwards the longevity that goes along with it. But also offers up the thought of looking back, being a carpenter's kid, didn't know how to build things yet. He built Christianity, or at least the start of it moving forward. And the thought with Colin hit on that note for the 3 days and the resurrection, the planted roses for the scent, is a nice touch to offering up a life again in that moment. And just thought, angle, still write poems, not clear how rocky the road. Again, that fall back to the, the turn of that long walk through the center of town out to the outskirts would be my guess. Or how steep the climb, again, climb to the top of the mount. Ideas of comets flying across the sky, all we can do is grab a few as they go by. That notion, sometimes something burns so brightly and streaks across the sky in a singular moment that all we can do is grab that notion, that idea, and help to nurture it along, make it grow, so to speak. Don't know, but notes of love and spirituality, and I'll have to check into neo-surrealistic realism to find out exactly what they mean by it, but I'm sure there's probably something to it. Back to you, Gene.
Okie dokie. Eugene, fix it. I put a word up. I don't know how it's going to go. Anywho, so listen, the next piece I'm going to put up is called Una Meg Carlisle by S. Sharp. And that I have an audio for. So let me click that button. There we go.
If the band should play a love song, let the tune be soft and blue. All things romantic drive me frantic, cause l'amour to me means you. Anything to do with makes me dream of nights with you. Anything to do with starlight, and my head goes reeling through the blue. Oh, my dear, I've made my mind up. You and I will wind up sharing fun and laughter, sweethearts ever after. Anything to do with stardust must begin and end with you.
Una Mae Carlisle, the distant memory of falsetto notes fall down the stairs towards the baritone abandoned crisscross checkerboard floor. Una Mae, I keep looking for you, dancing on the keys of the treble bridge. Catch each note before they land in my throat. Memories dance in and out of the shadows of dust between the keys. A time when everything was right, when you sang anything, but you were really singing about me. The cast iron railing kept hopes from falling as all the boys lined the stair where love ran up and down, scales playing like the memory of you sitting on the piano bench, doing what you do.
Makes me dream of nights with you. Anything to do with starlight, and my head goes reeling through the blue. Oh, my dear, I've made my mind up. You and I will wind up sharing fun and laughter, sweethearts ever after. Anything to do with stardust must begin and end with you.
Great piece there, Scott. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And Colin, why don't we start with you in this? What'd you think?
I was just commenting on it. If y'all can hear me okay, I thought this was just delightful. This is just terrific, you know. It's interesting, too, because I listened to the music and I read it in my mind, of course, initially, and I read it in that kind of, you know, internal monologue and this kind of, you know, my internal reading of it. But then when the narrator actually reads it back and that kind of urban kind of edgy, you know, style, it really changed the way I viewed the poem. And I love the musicality of it and the way it intertwines with this kind of ragtime, you know, 1920s, 1930s rhythm and cadence and, you know, this kind of colloquial imagery. And what really stands out to me, too, is I really love that line, the cast iron railing kept hopes from falling. I think that's just great. So I really thought this was terrific. And so I am commenting now as we speak. So.
Excellent. Thank you, Colin. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it because the thing is I've read and seen answer poems before. Like, you know, he wrote this as an answer to the song Anything by Una Mae Carlisle. But I've never heard anyone do a SoundCloud where they put the song and then they put their poem and then they put part of the song again. So it worked really well as a performance piece. It's beautiful all the way through. But I really like, I keep looking for you dancing on the keys of the treble bridge. You know, it feels like that idea of the mention of that bridge between heaven and earth, or at least that's kind of the thought that comes to my mind. It had a very nostalgic feeling to it, and I did love the musical references throughout. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you very much, Ben. All right, Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought this was a really clever piece, and it was a great concept and nicely done. It was really well presented. At first I thought, gosh, did I pick up the wrong link? You know, because there was a lot of music, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, good, good, good. I heard him kick in. But it was very nicely done. And Pam, like you said, the way it meshed together was nice. It had that nostalgic feel all the way through. So I thought that he did a great job with that. So nice work, Scott, and thanks for sharing it with us. Absolutely.
Definitely. I think Scott sent this to me a couple of days ago, but since I didn't have a phone until yesterday, I hadn't had a chance to look at it because he wanted a little heads up as to what I thought. It's a great piece. I did find the introduction music. I was when I heard from it. I first heard the kickoff. Oh, we're going to go a little down into the background, a little bit of jazz to play across this piece. But then I heard the original end of it, and then this on the back end fits a nice note. This walks the boys, like fresh out of high school, and they hear this new music. They think of jazz, and they see who's singing it, the note, and all of a sudden everybody's in love with it. That kind of drives what this has for me in here. Where was it? A time when everything was right, when you sang anything, but you were really singing about me. The cast iron railing kept hopes from falling as all the boys lined up the stair where love ran up and down, scales playing like a memory of you. It's a nice tale of young love and the voice of a singer capturing the heart, especially sitting down at the piano, belting out the tune as well as singing. So this kind of touches on a different angle. I like it. Scott did great with this. I loved the angle you took with the SoundCloud itself. All right, Jane, we're back on you.
Great comment, Russ. Okay, Pam, I have your piece up next. This is Komodo Dragon versus the Horse by Pam, right?
Yep. All right. No, it goes like this. I'm cruising this jungle with swagger and sway. I have saber claws that are itching to slay. Clippity-clop, clippity-clop, I hear you coming like a filly whose flank is getting spanked by the crop. You're racing down trails, your pacing is fast, but I have the mojo of a killer that knows how to last. I sneak back around and hit from behind. My strikes are combined to fuck with your mind. Your shame is my reign with the bites I am sending. Suspensory ligament, digital extensor are both giving in to my poison and pressure. There's nothing superficial in the flex of my muscle as I bring on your murder like a whodunit hustle. There's no monitoring this monitor gone mad with the snap and the bane in all of my moves. You're the old gray mayor that I'm needling as you grip on reality slips through my groove. Your composure is collapsing, you're gasping, my silence and violence is bringing you down. Your gluteals are bruising as they're hitting the ground. I start to dissect and devour while you're still alive. You're a crimson painting circus pony, begging for death, impotent hindquarters flipped and stripped. You've got no more tail to flick at the flies, and I'm enjoying this freak show with ice in my eyes. Let's call Mr. Ed to witness your last rites. Because, horse, of course, your life is the price you have paid in this fight. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And, oh, Jean, why don't we start with you? Now that you've been shocked to awaken this.
Hi, everybody. Damn it, Rex. Why do you do that to me all the time? Pam. Awesome people.
Awesome. Yes.
I'm just like, wow. I'm everywhere. I'm sorry. But it was a great piece and a great job because I think I remember you telling me you hit this and moved on to the next round on this poem. Is that correct? This is the last one you did.
Yep.
Right?
This was the second one I did. The last one I did was the third one. But yeah, this one I had also moved on to.
Sorry. Yes. Sorry.
Yeah.
For some reason I was thinking of the last one. But you did a wonderful job. Great fight. Amazing imagery throughout. and just really, we call Mr. Ed to witness our last rites, because horse, of course, your life is the price you'll see in this fight. Neat stuff. Just a really well-done piece, and I hope you'll share the rest of them with you, with us as you go along each round, because I enjoy seeing these and where they've gone. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Like you said, Jean, thank you. Colin, how about you?
Yeah, you know, what struck me here is just this amazing attention to, just meter and rhythm. And that this whole thing is, it's somewhat song-like, but it's just this great, deep, tactile imagery with this wonderful cadence and this, you know, these rhymes and these internal rhymes and this assonance and alliteration, all this stuff just kind of weaves together in this brilliant image, which is, you know, very hard to do. And it kind of almost struck me like the mid-20th century poetry that we read from, like, the South Side poets in Chicago, or maybe the Harlem poets, where they're Jean Toomer, where they have such attention to the way, you know, the words interact with the verbs and the imagery, and you get almost this jazz-like rhythm going, and that's what it seems to me here, and I think it's brilliantly done, and I really loved it.
Well, thank you, Colin.
Excellent. Comment there, Colin. Thank you. First question I got is, who in the hell took a horse for a battle round? I mean, the Cloak of Dragon is one thing, but a horse?
Well,
anyway.
You know, there was actually, I mean, we had somebody take a squirrel, all kinds, you know, there started out, this was, first round was like 48, and now we're down to 12. So there's quite a variety. Not everybody took a vicious fighting animal. So it is interesting, yeah. Though. So.
And how many of those little animals are still left living? Because you stuck to the ease of what a Komodo dragon is, because you hit on there's no monitoring, it's monitor gun there, because the Komodo is all part of the monitor lizard family. Them being the largest of their species. The bit of you offer up the angle with the poison, and that was a nice touch with the what was it? Oh, and there's no superficial in the flex of my muscle as I bring on your murder like a whodunit hustle. And then there was with the bifang cynic dispensary ligament digital extensor as both giving in the poison and my pressure. Nice bite. And the fact that the monitor brings that prey down by poison, sending in a nice poison, the toxin in the veins. As they start to get away, they run themselves to death. So all the monitor has to do is quietly lumber along until he comes back across his prey to then start gobbling up the stricken,
yeah.
Now on a slack leg, so to speak. And
yeah,
I like
yeah.
you hit on the notion of you calling this instant hindquarters, slip and strip. You've got no more tail to flick at the flies, and I'm joining this freak show with ice in my eyes. Let's call Mr. Ed to witness your last rites, because horse, of course, your life is the price you paid in this fight. I like thought you brought in Mr. Ed, and you also brought in the price is right with the life is the price. And it does add a bit of humor to it. Dragon
oh, yeah,
style.
I couldn't resist. I couldn't resist bringing in Mr. Ed. Yeah, well, and the thing with Komodo dragons is they don't actually wait for their prey to die, because the poison that they put in through their bite, it eventually causes the prey to not be able to move, but they're still alive. And Komodo dragons don't wait for their prey to die. They start tearing off hindquarters or whatever else they want while the animal's still alive. So.
Oh, yummy. You get to know what it's like to be in real time.
Or on Jane.
right back on you.
Okay, well, first, I think I want to welcome Dexter to the show. Am I right?
Yep, you are right.
Hey, Dex.
Oh, everybody.
It's good to have you, Dex.
Yeah, I thought there was no show tonight. So I got. What do I have to do? I have to sign into Blog Talk Radio to be able to see where you're posting?
Well, yes. Yes, we're working off of the topic board. I can put the poems up on the Blog Talk site, but it's not a link. You can't just click it and go to the poem. So you're better off.
So
better off going.
Oh, so you're just calling. You're just calling them out on the topic board.
Yes.
I'm putting them in the chat room, and then you guys are picking them up on the topic board. I know. It's
okay.
A little backwards, but I figure anybody who pokes their head in can see what I'm doing. You know.
Okay.
Just that way, I'm not sitting here twiddling my thumb. Yes, it's a little crazy. But, you know, everybody's got to be a little something, and I do crazy pretty well. So, Colin, I'm going to put the next one up for you, but you're going to have to drop down, like, to the fourth poem under Pam's, to Jack Blue. It's called A Cat's Pavane 2 by Jack Blue, if
okay.
you wouldn't mind.
A Cat's Pavane number 2 by Jack Blue. The tree was by the stone of a monkey's memory. Tree was by the stone of a donkey's memory. Long ago he blew the blues around the moonlit woods. My wand was tuning in to his funky radio show. Did I travel to the times or zoom in on the studio? I could hear the music live or really see it sapling rock on our donkey's jockey bass and his groovy band of grace. Putting down my wand, I flew back where I am. Now the silver oak besides the donkey's stone beckoned me majestically to her royal blue. End poem.
Great read, Dex. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, why don't you start it off?
Yeah, I always enjoy Jack's poetry. There's something just magical about this. I like the, my wand was tuning in to his funky radio show. Did I travel to the times or zoom in on the studio? I like the whole idea of getting grooving to the music. Now the silver oak beside the donkey's stone beckoned me majestically to her royal blue. I like the idea of the royal blue. Like you almost picture somebody wearing a dress. Oh, by the way, did I tell you last night when we were commenting on Jack's poem and I mentioned the idea that perhaps the blue sword was the pen? He actually messaged me this morning and said that I was spot on with that comment. I just had to share
awesome.
That because I'm so rarely. I'm so rarely spot on that I had to share that. I think of who is that character that rides a donkey and fights the windmills like they're giants, like a classic story novel.
I
don't know.
Don Quixote. Yes. Sorry, I know nobody said it. I just Don Quixote.
Yeah.
Well, I have this image of Don Quixote coming across a 1930s jazz club and trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And I'm pretty sure that comment I'm not spot on, but the thing is Jack Blue's poetry, his use of imagery always makes me smile. So this is an excellent brevity and very well done.
Wow, thank you very much, Jim. And Colin, how about you?
Yeah, it seems to me that it's a kind of a bewitching poem in some ways, is that you have these images that are kind of juxtaposed against each other with not an obvious relationship, but you know, the tree seems to be the thing that's singing to the poet, right, or the narrator.
or that the tree seems to be the thing that's invoking memories of music, right? That either happened around the tree or within the you know, vision of the tree. And then we have this radio image and this music coming through the radio and this kind of, you know, recollections of times that inspired the narrator both musically and poetically. And, you know, it's interesting, this putting down my wand, you know, I flew back to where I am and now the silver oak beside the donkey stone, right? This donkey stone, this tree, this evidently this image is something profoundly important, right, to the poet. And everything is royal blue. And the blue is an interesting color here, too, because it's not a hot color. It's a cold color. It's something that happened long ago, and he's bringing it back into memory. It's interesting. There's a lot to unpack here, and it's kind of perplexing, the whole thing, but in a delightful way, and you know, in a kind of moving, you know, intuitive way. So I enjoyed it. It's very interesting.
Well, thank you, Colin. And Dean, how about you?
Well, you know, I found this to be an interesting write. I found that as I looked at it, I saw, how did I put it, wands and donkeys and a moonlit woods, and the color blue somehow all led me to the Midsummer Night's Dream. I don't know how to explain that exactly, and I'm sure that maybe I'm not near the money here. But the different images just took me there. And I thought that was pretty interesting. And I thought it was nicely penned, and I enjoyed it. So intriguing.
Well, that's not a wrong answer, since Jack does enjoy dropping in Shakespeare, amongst other things, to hit the mind with. And Dex, how about you? You got to read it.
Well, I Googled a pavane. A pavane is a stately dance in slow duple time, popular in the 16th and 17th century, and performed in elaborate clothing. So, obviously, he does do a little bit of time travel. I think everybody was somewhat correct. And this was brought us back in time a little bit to 16th, 17th century, that might be right around medieval times or the dark era or something along those lines. But he kind of brought us back to a dance club at that time. So I thought it was very interesting and intriguing and well thought out.
Nice. Thank you. Funny thing is, all of that fits in, but the donkey in this, I can see is the donkey out of Shrek. You remember that one? There's that note of humor and irony that donkey brought to the table in that movie that kind of fits in with this, too. And the thought of a skunky radio show also fits that theme. But also, as Gene said, the note to a Midsummer Night's Dream. And the thought is, or really see a sapling rock on our donkey's jokey base. There's an easy thought there. You could drop the B and it would still work as a note on our donkey's jokey ass and his groovy band of grace. There's that note of having a little fun with the angle. But putting down the wand also, it's on that note of this being a touch of Merlin going back in time. We're all moving back, moving through two times and looking at the world as it's gone on. Yeah, but he starts out the tree up top in the moonlit woods. And on the bottom, he thins out, it's a silver oak, so there's age gone by. And the donkey stone beckoned me majestically to her royal blue. That royal blue could be the thought of a morning coming, the note of a new day emerging. Nicely done, Jack. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, Jane. We're back to
okay.
you.
Okay, Colin. Just underneath the Jack's piece is another piece by Wichita Rick. And if you'd be so kind as to read that for us.
And, Gene, it looks like the chat is back moving.
You're
oh, is it? Oh, that's awesome.
On late night.
That would be very cool. There we go. Okay, I see Naomi saying hello. I guess that's a good
thing. This is on board.
All right, we can go home. We're going home. A mess. Okay, well, then let me put that link up for you. Awesome. That's awesome.
Pam, do you
Thanks.
See one of you ring this, or treat this?
Yes, sirree, Colin, if you don't mind.
This is screen door always open. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay. Screen door always open. Flashback of a slow train and a narrow track. Visions from a car window or an old pickup truck. Memories of tasting dirt roads and noisy toads. Taking in all the white old wheels spin. Arrival looks like a revival, minus the Bible. Wind washed home between railroad tracks next to an old riverbank. Juvenile sensations, sensationalized. Taste of mulberry, watermelon, Kool-Aid, and Tupperware. Refinery. The constant scent of tar or diesel. Smell of whitewash, not political yet. Waiting line at the tire swing. Barefoot brings bee stings. Soft, familiar feeling of clover between the toes. Wiffle ball for all. Plenty to do for me or you. Willingness to play holds highest rank. More fun catching bait than avoiding the old ball bait and switch. Lessons laid out and kept separate like hooks on a trot line, uncaring for the memories these days would bring. Collecting sunshine, spring blistering burns, red skin clashes with red hair, grass stains and heat show no pain, prove both with wonders with a wash tank. No hills, a few dales, lakes and streams in between. Grandma Nellie's reward, a penny for each dandelion dug, endless fodder for young hands to wander like a merry-go-round. Little minds spin and spin, few recollections of adults. They must have been bored, staying in shade, porch protected, ordered by age from front to back. Melancholy notes drifting down from meadowlarks or morning doves, mixed country, Beatles on AM radio, sights, sound, tastes enter, mark unique imprints on our soul, carried softly to the ends. No future lost when unknown. We will miss it when it's gone. Clyfield, now, to these old folks, I still give a bow. Next time, we see an old house with a screen door wide open, it's more family adding memoirs to their masterwork. RC and Paul.
Great read there, Colin. Thank you very much. And Dex, why don't we start with you?
Well, this is a very good piece, about a certain time in history, and you know, kind of before technology was very prevalent in homes. You know, maybe you had the radio, maybe you did have a TV with a couple of phone or with a couple of channels, but the kids lived outside, and you got dirty, drank out of the hose. You had wiffle ball. You know maybe you got scuffed your knees, things like that. But kids lived outside, and they lived for all the activities that happened outside, and it was kind of before a time of fear. Of it was a time of community, because nowadays when you think, you know, you got the porch door open, like the screen door open, referring to the title, you know, maybe an intruder might come in and things like that. You know, it was kind of before all of being afraid of your neighbor was a thing, and it was a fantastic write.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Dex. Pam, how about you?
Oh, this is great. I love how it takes us back to a time when summers were spent more outside and not overly worrying about, like, the time when you drank water from the garden hose and ran around and got bug bites and scratches and bruises. And, you know, there was a sense of fun and a sense of freedom. I like the attention to detail, the imagery. I really just liked No Hills But a Few Dales, Lakes and Streams in Between, Grandma Nellie's Reward a Penny for Each Dandelion Dug. You know, they really, and you can only just imagine the joy of a young boy who gets, a full penny per dandelion pulled. And, really thought this was a beautiful write on the whole idea of, where life is just fun and happy, and you just you don't worry about every little thing. So, excellent write.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
I thought it was a really nicely done piece by Rick. He always has such an in-depth take in his poetry, and I think that he did a really great job. And interesting little boy summertime memories. Nice work, Rick. Thanks for sharing with us.
Thank you, Jean. And Colin, you got to read it. What do you think?
I mean, yeah, obviously this is it's a pastoral, right? It's almost Wordsworthian in its approach, and it's delightful. I mean, it's just so rich. And you read through this, and obviously people of my age, I mean, we can remember the youth being outside, right? The enjoyment of nature and these things. And I think what really struck me as one of the best bands is that collecting sunshine brings blistering burns, red skin clashes with red hair. And it's just this great, this idea of going out and being subject to the sun, but indulging in it and throwing yourself into nature is just so beautiful, the whole thing. It's just terrific. I love this pastoral quality to this. It's just really, really nice.
Excellent. Thank you, Colin. It had a nice nostalgic feel to it, and everybody's right. It hits on the notion of when time was a little simpler, when you did things outside and with your friends and your family sat on the front porch. The idea of the screen door always open is that note of invitation and community. Where you lived, you knew everybody, and you didn't avoid things. Barefoot brings bee stings, soft, familiar feeling of clove between toes, whiffle ball for all. And the willingness to play holds the highest rank. It hits on that notion, hey, you know what? It's all in the fun. And there was that couple of notes in here that he brought up that were kind of brought in the modern day angle. White smell of whitewash, not political yet. Nice touch there. And yet there was another one of the bait and switch, which was to actually bait the line for fishing rather than the bait and switch we get these days. Yeah, well, I'll offer you this, but you get this instead. So a nice little turnaround of bringing it forward a bit while steeping it into the idea of 50 years ago, even 60 years ago, straight with the Beatles on AM radio. And the thought of no future lost, one unknown, we will miss it when it's gone. Sci-fi now to those old folks that still give a bow. Next time we see an old house with the screen door wide open, is more families adding memoirs to their masterwork. Still harking back to a simpler time where, like Doug said, you can't do that anymore. You still find patches of that little sense of community where everything is easy and people still trust each other, but those are far in between, and they're going fast, unfortunately. Nicely done, Rick. Thank you very much. All right, Jean. We're back to you. Choo-choo.
Okie doke. Let me see. I'm going to put it, the next piece. It's called, hang on. Boy, this thing is pain in the neck. It's not refreshing. Okay, this is called Elysian Ataraxia by Rhonda Yoshri. I'm gonna read this one. Now it's hard to believe, but swallowing by a precarious quagmire of emotional vacuity, snapping at heels, all life, lading them with a steam vessel, desolation running at high speed till the euphoria rhythm flow of sunlight, waves breach through the clouds, thick walls, dawning cognizance of love. Solitude fled at the first glinting love word on the day's page. Mind is crowned on the gladness imperial throne by love virtuoso, ethereal fingers touch, courting by serenity, supreme retinue. Face beaming with ecstatic childlike senses, humming as they striding through the jubilation's grand abode corridors as an excitable butterfly that wings its way smoothly through an aesthetic spring's odorous air. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Pam, start with you.
Yeah, this has a beautiful flow to it. And it's a lovely write all the way through. But I especially like the second stanza, solitude fled at the first glinting love word on the day's page, mind is crowned on the gladness and preal throne. I like the whole idea of how that those lines there really capture the idea of how love makes you feel beautiful. Love makes you feel appreciated and, you know, less alone. And face beaming with ecstatic childlike senses humming as they stride through the jubilation's band abode. I really like how this has that fairy tale-like feel to it in the use of the word jubilation. You know, I just wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Colin, how about you?
Yeah, I think I support that idea that second stanza being what really stands out. And I think that what I really love about that is that solitude fled at the first glinting love word on the day's page. This is interesting, right? It's something that's written. It's something that's written and permanent. It's something that endures, right, and delights the narrator, right? And it's the gladness of the imperial throne, right, but it takes, you know, control of the whole situation. So that's very, very nice. You know, there's a lot of abstract, you know, kind of flowing, you know, kind of ethereal quality to this whole thing, which is, you know, delightful. It's very interesting. That part particularly, that the glinting love in the day's page is what really stands out to me as being the highlight of the whole poem.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Colin. All right, Dex, how about you?
Yeah, I thought that this was a fantastic write. I enjoyed it quite a bit. The vocabulary in it is pretty stunning, and used kind of in an exquisite way that almost has a classical feel to it, but it's still done in kind of a modern day fantasy tale, almost of love. But I just thought it was a fantastic write.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Dex. All right, Jane, you got to read it. How about you?
I wrote the thing and then went off somewhere else to do something. Oh, my God, I'm losing my mind tonight. I thought it was a great write, wonderful wording throughout this piece. Awesome imagery and beautifully expressed. So I think Rhonda did a great job, and thanks for sharing with us tonight, Hunter.
Excellent. Thank you. I'm going to go with something a little different. That opening stanza right down to a desolation running at high speed kind of hits the notion of life itself, everything being dumped into the moment. And then that opening with the last three lines, till the euphoria-ridden flow of sunlight waves breached the cloud's thick walls, dawning cognizance of love. I get the impression with that alone, it's that notion of waking up from a bad night of dreaming about all the things that are necessary to be done and be done by you or have done to you. And you wake up to that note to the sunlight, the dawning of cognizance of love, and you flow into that second stanza, that by the end of it, by love, virtuosity, ethereal fingers touch, coursing by serenity, supreme retina, there's that note of mindless crowd on that thought of waking up to the one person you're in love with right next to you in bed, and that soft touch in the morning. And then right after that, smiling face, beams ecstatic, childlike, sense of humming and striding through jubilation's grand abode corridors like an excitable butterfly that moves its way smoothly through the ascetic springs, odorous air. It's kind of it's almost a notation to a little bit of sensuous activity first thing in the morning. All right, Jane, we're coming back your way.
Okie dokie. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Kinsley Rain by Diane Z. And I have an audio for that. And here we go. Wait, I have to refresh to make sure it went. Okay, great. Okay, here we go.
Kinsley Rain by Diane D. The day I held you, skin to skin, I part my lips to breathe you in. I hear your frightened baby cries. I look into your peeking eyes. I felt a love that made time stop. I found a purpose that I had not. I say your name, you halfway smile. I easily float a million miles. In you are stories not yet told, a flower waiting to unfold. My world explodes in rainbow hues. You are a feather of peacock blues. I knew at once the sky had parted, for on that day my life had started. I'll teach to you of right from wrong, and should you need, I'll walk along. I won't hold back, I'll let you grow. I'll answer why, I'll explain no. I'll show you how, then let you try. Should you say no, I won't ask why. I'll wait for you to come around, to get back up should you fall down. I'll not turn back, I'll always care. Should you reach out, I will be there. And who you love, I will love too. I'll trust you know what's good for you. I swear today that you will see that when it's time, I'll set you free. End poem.
Great read, Diane. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Colin, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, I listened to it and I enjoyed it. I'm just having problems finding it in the feed. What was the title of it again?
Oh, Kinsley Rain. I'll go. I'll hit on the next person. Give you a chance to catch up. Dex, how about
sure,
you?
Sure. I'm just trying to find it in the feed.
Fantastic read. Congratulations on the front page pick. Very well deserving. I think the stanza that stands out to me is, I won't hold back, I'll let you grow, I'll answer wise, I'll explain no, I'll show you how, then let you try, should you say no, I won't ask why. It's just such an affection for the child that you expressed throughout this entire thing, and it's from a place of experience and knowing your boundaries. I believe what it says here is that great-grandmother, you know, and it's from a grandmother's point of view, you know, it's kind of that one removed and it's just that offering that loving, helping hand any way that you can, and allowing to grow. So very well done.
All right. Thank you, Dex. Jean, how about you?
I
think she posted me right back. She posted
yeah,
me right back with the poll.
Yeah,
oh,
I did.
Okay.
I did. I had to step away. But I thought it was a beautiful piece written by Diane. I mean, there is nothing like a newborn baby, you know. At least that's my opinion. You know, you do. You breathe them in. You just absorb as much as you can of them, you know, against your skin. Or, you know, when you inhale, you know, you inhale so deeply. And it's just incomparable to anything else in the world. And, you know, I don't know about a great-grandma, but it's got to be at least as good as being a grandma, and I can relate to that. So, wonderful piece, full of love and great expression. So, thank you, Diane.
Nice, and even brought in that new car smell. I like that. Thank you, Jean. And, Colin, how about you? Did you get a chance to catch up?
Oh, yeah, okay. I finally see I finally got it. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously the very musical qualities of this in the strict rhyme scheme is very nice, you know, with these quatrains with these four-line stanzas and everything. And it's very beautiful, you know, dedication, right, to the baby, and it makes sense, right, when you finally see it and you read through it and you see the picture and everything, and it's very endearing, and who you love, I will love too, you know, it's very sweet, you know, I'll trust you, what's good for you, I'll support a day, and you will see that when it's time, I'll set you free. So yeah, it's very nice, and I can see why it was a popular poem.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Colin. Pam, how about you? You're going to bring in that new car smell, too?
Maybe.
Pam?
Okay,
Pam, take yourself out of mute.
Yes, I'm here. All right. This is a beautiful and heartfelt write on that feeling you get when you first hold a child, you know, whether you're a parent or a grandparent. And I like how it's all about the not only the love, but the dreams and the hopes that, you know, you have for a child. I like the line particularly, I felt a love that made time stop. And in you are stories not yet told, a flower waiting to unfold. My world explodes in rainbow hues. You are a feather of peacock hues. I won't hold back. I'll let you grow. I'll answer whys. I'll explain no. You know, that whole idea of those, you know, communicate, the importance of communicating with a child. So beautifully written and very well done.
Great comments, everybody. And this is nice and it's tender and sweet, and it does open up that grandmother or great-grandmotherly thought of, hey, I'll help you along. I'll teach you about right and wrong. And should you need, I'll walk along. I won't hold back. I'll let you go. I'll answer why. I'll explain. No. There is that nice, the teaching moments grandmothers and great-grandmothers can offer up that kids might actually hold on to or grasp a little more tightly in the moment, because they come from somebody much older and much adored because of what they bring to the table for the kids. Nicely done, Diane. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
TV Dogany. Let me see now. I'm going to put up the next piece by We Are All Gonzo. And that is Sleeping Beauty Audio Drama Part 7.
Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun.
There we go. And here we go.
One rich man in 10. with a satisfied mind.
Jack sat bare in his wicker chair as his wild copper-colored hair covered skin unaware. All the while, a familiar tune blared in the air. Proud at his action taken, had he been mistaken and become complacent, Sleepy would have sliced him into bits like bacon. Still in his mind, he couldn't find the peace he desired, for he realized the design of revenge would not tire. No body, no murder, no evidence left, but also no way of confirming her death. He wished to be patient, debonair and confident in her defeat, but all he can think is,
she'll kill me in my sleep.
Scared by a cracking switch alerting someone else was there, Jack spied eyes through the glass with a fast blast of the chicken. He cracked the glass and approached with tact and fear.
I saw that. I know you're out there.
Jack spotted Sleepy standing alone in the woods. He fired a second shot to her chest, but it appeared to be no good. Sleepy tactically dodged each egg without a single motion.
Must be a spell or some kind of potion causing this commotion. I swear there's no way you're walking away from this place.
Before firing more eggs indiscriminately every which way, a new image of Sleepy appeared on display. Perplexed and confuzzled, Jack snarled and struggled to stumble out a mumble describing his troubles.
You're a goat. You're just a figment of my imagination. I'm losing my goddamn mind.
Fear coiled in Jack, awaiting reprisals or the specter's denial, but nothing seemed to keep his shattered courage intact. For what Jack saw, if he had exercised discretion, was not Sleepy at all. It was just her reflection.
Hi, Jack.
The magic mirror suddenly appeared on the window facing his way. Realizing his mistake, Jack quickly turned away, but it was too late as Sleepy sealed his fate with a sword to the heart standing inches from his face.
Bye, Jack.
With a flick and a twist, Jack turned into a fountain with such volume an artist could speckle a mountain.
Money.
His unfolded flesh bloomed like a crescent, harsh, such a lesson, but he had to respect it. Sleepy glared at the mirror, expecting some dark irreverence.
We're gonna make a lot of money on that bird.
I'm gonna keep a hold of him. I need to make sure he has a proper home with someone that will use that wealth to help others.
Or, and this is a really good serious idea, we could beat by the little f***er and then we can eat him. And nobody gets any money.
That's fair too.
Sleepy headed out the door as the record skipped its song.
Money can't buy love that's grown cold, love that's grown cold.
So, if a queen dies silently in her castle and no one knows,
is she really dead?
It won't be silent. I can guarantee that.
Unbeknownst to Sleepy, the queen sat in her royal chambers making wagers in her favor behind the political scenes. Elderly and stressed, her brow furrowed from oppressed anger, jealousy, and derangement still quelling over Sleepy's engagement.
She cannot be discovered to be who she really is, as long as that pointless quest of hers keeps her away from the governor's chambers. I see no reason to make her stray the paw.
But my queen, she has already killed
a bunch of useless, overpaid mercenaries. Do you know what the greatest thing about mercenaries are?
My queen?
If they die, you just hire more. I want this place swimming with them. When she does show up, and I know she will, we won't be unprepared.
Yes, my queen.
And as for you, your loyalty has been on question. You will be handsomely rewarded for your services. After you're released from your prison, of course. Only providing you bring her here. Alone and as ignorant as the day she woke. Now, one more time before I slumber. Say it.
Thou art the fairest in the land.
Great read, Gonzo. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It's very much appreciated. Dex, why don't we start with you?
What a tale that he weaves here, and what a SoundCloud. I appreciate the effort put in and taking that, you know, old mirror on the wall to the next level. I love the dialogue. the story and just the overall darkness of it. You know, I just loved the top part talking about mercenaries. You know, you did when they die, nice part about them, when they die, you just hire more. But I thought it was very well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Dex. And Pam, how about you?
Oh, I thought this was a fun, twisted fairy tale. As always, a great performance piece. I love how he takes the classic characters and gives them a totally new makeover. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Colin, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty fun. I mean, we start with a Johnny Cash intro. We fly into this, like, you know, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And obviously, you know, you see, like, Sleepy and you know, different dwarves are referenced here. And then we finally end up with, like, a theme from the Matrix movie. So it's pretty crazy and pretty fun, you know, this reflection that, you know, going back to the narrator and kind of tormenting him and this inner dialogue and these imaginary figures and all this stuff. Yeah, it's wild. I mean, there's a lot to unpack here, but it's a lot of fun.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Colin. All right, Gene, your take on this fractured fairy tale.
Another wonderful installment for this series. I mean, this is only number 7, you know, and it hasn't grown boring at all. I mean, he's just everywhere in this this whole concept of his, and it's clever and it's well written and it's well thought out. The presentations are always good, you know, and interesting. They kind of hold your interest in. I don't know. It's just got something really different going on, you know, because it's not the same old, you know, as all the fairy tales we all are so familiar with. He definitely taken them and tossed them up in the air and grabbed whatever it was that made it work for him, and I think that's pretty cool. So nice work, Gonzo, and I look forward to next week's installment. Absolutely.
Oh, yes, this is another wonderful piece. I like the thought with taking the DA out of the 50s and actually using it real time with the goose itself. Yes, we're shooting eggs out of duck's ass and we expect it to kill you. Nice touch with that. But I also like the thought with the magic mirror. He offered up the Schrodinger's cat with the magic mirror. So if a queen dies silently in her castle and no one knows, is she really dead? Positive question. She would be in a state. Now, I took Dex hit on that notion of the overpaid mercenaries. Hey, just get some more. Doesn't matter. We don't have to pay those ones now. We can pay these ones. So that works out well. And I back to the magic mirror to finish out. Thou art the third in the land. That notice supplication, even though he helped Sleepy in the middle of this by killing off Jack. Also a nice touch. So yeah, I can't wait for the rest of this tale to unfold. Nicely done, Gonzo. All right, Jane. Bye.
Okay, well, let's all say welcome to Naomi. Hopefully she won't.
Hello.
Welcome aboard.
Hey, Naomi.
Yeah, I'm out camping. Everybody's snoring around me. It's boring, and I decided to phone in. But I can cut off any minute. The Wi-Fi is not too good.
Oh, my God.
You know what? You should have had one of those toys that they use on the Internet nowadays. You should have taken the Sharker with you. You could wake him up in the dark. Ah, who did that? You did. You have a blast with that.
Oh, my God. Okay, guys. Well, look, I'm heading down the list now. So if you've been here on the line and you have a poem on the board, it's coming. It's coming. So, Rex, right now I have one for you by Dan Deschino.
All right.
If you would be so kind.
Excellent. Defeat on the Flight to Forever by Daniel DeShino. White may be collaborative and combine all things, but blackness is hungry, stealth, and forever. As the raven who flies at dusk defines history to be the legend of shadow, defeat is not an end without the defeated choice. Honor is to bow gracefully to acceptance and grow, and the eagle shows might and pride, and the seagull flies between water and earth, and the mourning dove sings to please the world, and the raven flies through it all as a shadow of legend among lights of today, phoenix of black whispers, and in the abyss of the multipath multiverse future appears a breath of black fragrance perception among visions from those that dream when looking skyward. The raven will be seen again. And poem.
All right.
And Naomi, why don't we start with you, please? Could you be the newbie?
Yeah, this is a great write by Daniel here. I'm having trouble. I'm going back between the phone and the internet here. But I really liked it. And the eagle shows might and pride, and the seagull flies between water and earth, and the mourning dove sings to please the world, and the raven flies through it all. Just a beautiful, insightful, philosophical, I think, you know, poem, very well written by Daniel.
Thank you, Naomi. And Beth, how about you?
Yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. And, you know, and in the abyss of the multi-past, multiverse future appears a breath of black fragrance perception. Just some stunning language that he uses throughout to really signify and give the essence of this raven and the flight forever. So very, very well done.
Thank you, Nick. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this had beautiful imagery and metaphors, a strong and thought-provoking write. I really like honor is to bow gracefully to acceptance and grow. That whole idea that, you know, life teaches us lessons through the difficult times that we go through. And I also really liked the, and in the abyss of the multi-path, multiverse future appears a breath of black fragrance perception. It's intriguing how, you know, our perception can change depending on our experiences. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Tim. And Colin, how about you?
Yeah, I would add to that, you know, of course, the raven, right, is Odin's bird, right, that goes out and surveys the world and reports back to its master, right? So there's a certain sagacious, you know, mythological quality, right, to this black bird that basically flies around and basically absorbs, right, because black absorbs, unlike white, which reflects, right, the happenings of the world, which makes it, you know, interesting, right, because I think Daniel typically uses a lot of mythological imagery in his poetry, and I think that's definitely reflected here. Nicely done.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Colin. Dex, how about you?
I think I already commented on this one.
Oh, didn't? Yeah, I must be slipping.
Gene,
how about you?
Well, I thought this was a well-penned piece by Dan. His thoughts were well expressed, and he had great imagery throughout. And I really enjoyed it. So excellent work, and thanks for sharing. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Gene. Thank you, everybody. There is a note that rings through this and in on it is the thought of what a raven represents as a collective. They're called a conspiracy. So that angle of which Colin just brought up, flying back to its master after reviewing all things and collecting all things, because it absorbs and reports back, gives it that note to conspiracy. So maybe the underlying tone in this is the sort of looking at darkness as that conspiratorial angle, while white offers up the note of truth and light. So maybe the idea on the angle of things is, despite the raven flying and all being there all the time, it doesn't mean we have to dip into the conspiracy, so to speak, and be open-ended to the light and that which it brings. All right, Gene. I was off kilter with that one. But...
All righty. Pam, I have another one for you, please.
And this sure.
Is, where do we bleed the scent of chrysanthemums by Glow Lizzy?
All right. Roses bleed the scent of chrysanthemums by Glow Lizzy. Thorn tips drip with poison as vines wrap around, squeezing tightly, taking my breath, each a dagger threatening to rip through flesh, lashing tongues, ripping words no eyes can see, the welted marks, internal bruises, hemorrhaging beneath a false smile, screams trapped within my throat, burning like salted cut flesh, the broken voice box crushed by invisible hands. Roses laced with venomous thorns placed within my hand, forced to walk beside you as blood trails behind. The smell of chrysanthemums envelope the crimson rose, shattered eye, the garden where death blooms on vines. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Boy, that was nicely done, touch of darkness. Colin, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, this is certainly very dark. I mean, very intense. There's a certain quality of violence to this whole thing. Screams trapped within my throat, burning like salted cut flesh. I mean, not just cut flesh, but salted. Broken voice box. You know, this desperation, this voiceless desperation. This powerlessness and this just absolute hopelessness of this whole thing. But it's interesting because it's juxtaposed against, you know, the beautiful imagery of flowers, which makes it, you know, really interesting and kind of connects to the picture too, right, which is at the top of the poem. But it's definitely intense and dark and moving, you know. So it's definitely well done and intense.
Absolutely. Thank you, Colin. Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, this is it shows the anguish that's going on inside of a person. I just lost it again. I can't read it. But it's wonderful, wonderful right here by Glow Lizzy. It just shows it's very emotive. She really rips into you with her words here. And, you know, great imagery, great metaphors throughout. Just an excellent write, so well composed throughout the whole piece.
Well said, Naomi. Thank you. And Dex, how about you?
Yeah, I thought that this was a great piece. I think that it could be very well used as a metaphor for depression. It could be used as a metaphor for kind of some sort of drug use. It could be used as a metaphor for maybe cutting. Just used very well done for something that's really just hurting, you know, not only, you know, it's actually causing damage and harm to the body and the soul, and it's expressed very well here. So, great write.
I like that. Thank you, Dex. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought that this was nicely penned. It was wonderfully dark and well done. And it was a great take on the picture prompt. So nice work, Chloe Leslie, and thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Jean. Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, this is a beautiful and haunting dark rite, powerful imagery. You know, to me, what I feel like this is about is the idea of a emotionally abusive relationship that nobody pays attention to the warning signs. Nobody, you know, everybody ignores what's going on. It leads to a physically abusive relationship, which leads to death. And the reason I say that is because, you know, like lines like, you know, holding the scars inside or internal bruises and a broken voice box crushed by invisible hands. And then even the fact like, okay, like roses oftentimes represent romance, love. But the chrysanthemum is a flower oftentimes given to people at funerals. So the smell of chrysanthemums envelopes the crimson rose, the shattered eye of the garden. You know, so to me, this is somebody who died because of physical abuse. Now, I'm not sure they died necessarily at their abuser's hand or killed themselves, but I just get the idea that the roses represent what people thought was going on, the romance, the love, and the chrysanthemums represent what was really going on. And so beautifully written and very well done.
Well said, Pam. And I agree with you. This was about abuse, mental abuse, lashing tongue, whipping words. No eyes can see the welcome march. There is the internal bruises coming beneath the post smile. There is that nice touch of that. But also, roses laced with venomous thorns placed within my hand, forced to walk beside you as blood trails behind. There's that note of somebody should have been able to see that at that point. The rose is representing, like you said, the love angle, but the fact that she's forced to walk behind offers up that notion of being a thought less of. A woman has to know her place, and that is behind the man, so to speak, instead of alongside. And you're right, the smell of the phantoms offers up that note to death, and what you find at funerals as a note in the shattered eyes of garden. Where death blooms on vines, for the blooming on the vines might be her thought to an everlasting note to that which she represents now in passing. Nicely done, Glow. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Hello. Okay, Colin, I have your piece up next, so whenever you're ready.
Okay, Jean, one second here.
You got it.
Is this one Crow's Rust?
Yeah.
Yes, we're Crow's Rust.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right, when Crow's Rust. Then it seemed the arms of willows wrapping over rooftops were like rolling reckless prayers of radian and orange, escaping the bewitched limiting horizon where children dance and where crows rest. And it seemed the quiet courtyards between red brick schools, like the soft arms of young mothers, shrouded us in pensive fields and warm vistas, holding a silent laughing where young boys smile and crows rest. And I loved, or I thought I did, wandering among verdant halos, scorched gardens, and exploding flowers that she weaved and awarded willing necks and raptured vines in that place where the furtive sun blasts away the places where crows rest. And poem.
Great read, Colin. Thank you very much. And Pam, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I really like this all the way through. Beautiful imagery. Wonderful read there, Colin. I'm really glad you could call in. I was intrigued about the idea. I have to say, I was intrigued about the idea of the willow trees wrapping over rooftops were like rolling reckless prayers of viridian and orange. I don't know if houses are shorter or willow trees are taller where you live, but I've never seen a willow tree taller than a house. I thought so. I don't know. I mean, I'll have to have you tell me about that sometime. But loved the imagery in this. Loved the idea of the almost mythological feel of the idea of these messengers, these crows that are messengers, taking time to rest. You know, there's an innocence in this, in the idea of the laughing and the smiling of a young boy, and the quietness. And I really like it. I really enjoy that the stanza that starts with, "And I loved or thought I did, wandering among verdant halos, scorched gardens and exploding flowers, as she weaved and awarded willing necks and raptured minds." It feels like to me the idea of loving a person that you thought you knew who they were until you discovered who they you know, that they weren't exactly who they pretended to be. But really intriguing and beautiful imagery and very well done.
Thank you. And Dex, how about you?
Yeah, this is a very intriguing write, and you know, I think that where the crows rest is typically kind of away from people, right, and kind of off on their own, but I think that what you kind of see here is that that's kind of where children like to roam. And that's kind of like where they want to get away too. And I felt like the poem is almost an escape. And where the crows rest, it's also kind of where the kids like to escape to also. But I could be wrong, you know, and maybe it's an escape from society as a whole, but I could be wrong, but that was kind of my take on it. Very well done.
Thank you, Dex. Naomi, how about you? Did we lose
she
Naomi?
She off again, so she's just going to listen.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Jean, how about you?
Okay, well, Colin, I thought this was a great piece. Now, where did I lose it? Oh, God. Oh, give me a second. I turned my head and all hell broke loose. Serious. I thought it was an excellent work, definitely. Great imagery in the piece, and I loved your intro stanza, catching reader's attention and drawing them into the rest. I thought it was nicely penned. Great job. Great job.
Thank you, Jean. Colin, I too like that opening stanza. Arms of willows wrapping over rooftops were like rolling reckless prayers of meridian and orange, escaping the bewitched limiting horizon, where children dance and where crows rest. I thought that that little abstract look at of clouds rolling on and the colors expressing them and the thought of the limiting horizon hits on that note of how kids think that they're kind of expansive in the moment, sponges. So they like to explore, and that's kind of where the crows rest. And I like that touch of the three and crows rest and where crows rest. It was a nice touch because the courtyards between red brick schools, soft arts young mother stragglers and pensive fields and warm vistas, holding a silent laughing where young boys smile and cry. And again, crows rest. If that notation is back pushed it to escaping, being little boys or kids having fun. There's that notion of exploration and seeing what is to be seen, what is to be found, and the joy and play that one gets in that angle. So you hit willing necks and raptured mind in that place where the furtive sun blasts away the places where crows rest. So that was a great piece.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Jane, we're back on you.
Okay, Dexter, I have the next piece for you, if you don't mind, and whenever you're ready.
Sure.
All right. This is Francois Lenné. Click-clunk. A skinny, tall, intense, beady-eyed man walked along the deck of a giant, weathered, blood-stained buccaneer ship. Those eyes fixated on three men shackled. 60 putrid, burly, ragged savages waited, so quietly one could hear a mouse urinating on cotton. Only the sea swoosh as competition. A seizure-like jerk and drawing a dagger from his waistband, the pacing man drove the archaic blade into the first prisoner's chest. The man let out a high-pitched, ghastly wail. This seemed to only enrage those sinister eyes, and with a violent scream into the man's dying face, he ripped, and then ripped, and then with a final rip, he stood holding the man's heart, still beating. Every person in attendance in complete awe. Then, with a hyena-like laugh, he tore a bloody hunk right out of the side of the slowing heart with his front teeth, then leisurely kneeled down. Face to face with the next man in capture, he spit the fleshy, rubber-like piece of heart into the man's face, landing with a slap. And he very calmly said, "I'm only going to ask you once. Now, where is the gold?" End poem.
Great read, Mason. Ah, what a savage tale it be. Pam, we can start with you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. This is great. You have a gift for storytelling there. And, you know, I like that you took an actual a person that existed in history and wrote a story about them. And that's not always easy to do because, you know, you're taking a person that already exists. So you have to pay, like, you have to give great attention to detail. Like, here, you really got into the visceral imagery. You got into the sound words, like the click-clunk, click-clunk. And the reaction of everybody, you know, you put your own spin on the idea of how you imagine everybody would have reacted as this pirate is walking in this, you know, every person in attendance in complete awe, then with a hyena-like laugh tore a bloody hunk right out of the side of the slowing heart with his front teeth, then leisurely kneeled down. And I love that buildup of intensity and the whole way you just capture the like I said, the visceral violence and the cold-bloodedness of the scene. It's just really an epic night and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Thanks, Pam. And Colin, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of that. It's fun that you have these kind of quatrains and this very kind of classical, you know, presentation here. But at the end of the day, it's a fun narrative poem, right, about this Francois Lenné, you know, this notorious pirate, you know, from the 17th century. And, you know, his almost poetic levels of violence and depravity and you know, just villainy, right, on the high seas, right, that gets put to poetry here. And it's fun, and there's a lot of, like, fun imagery here. And it's interesting, too, the way that it all ends up with, you know, the last quote. I'm only going to ask you once, you know, where's the gold? So, yeah, it's fun. I want more, right? I want to find out more.
I like
Thank
your
you,
idea.
Colin.
Fun.
And Gene, how about you?
Well, you know, when I first heard this, I thought it was well done and a great story. You know, there's a lot of great imagery, and it was very detailed, and I really enjoyed it. I think it was one of the first stories you ever read on the air with us, Dex. I could be wrong, but it was where we kind of found out that you really were great at stories, and you know, we were all hooked. So I'm glad you brought it back for us to read again. Nice work.
Thank you, Phil.
Well, shiver me timbers, where's the grog? We be having fun tonight. Now, I like the opening. The click, clunk, click, clunk, click, clunk, clunk gives off that idea of the sailor and Raymond's hitting on the hip bone as he strides back and forth. But the clunk also offers up that thought of a wooden leg. Click, clunk, click, clunk. So you get a little notation of who and what this man might have been at the moment. And then that you got a really funny line in that second stanza, actually two lines, the bottom two. So the ragged savages waited so quietly one could hear a mouse urinating on cotton, only the sea smooth the swish as competition. That was a nice note to the gentle sway of the ocean being so quiet that you could hear a mouse pissing on cotton. That was a nice touch of added darkness of flavor, literal flavor. And I did like the story. You hit on the note of him getting into the act. Once he hears that dying scream, the eyes get real cold and blistered, look deeply, and he goes savage, ripping up open the chest so he can take out the beating heart. And then, just to prove his point, take a bite out of that heart, that rubbery confection now streaming all over his mouth and down his cheeks, and then spit that chunk into the next guy and holds him out. Yeah, you see what just happened to your friend? Oh, I know. I am going to ask only once, where's my bloody gold? Nice touch to finish.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome. All right, Gene, we're back to you.
Okay, well, I put a word out asking Naomi if she wanted to read her piece, and she has not answered. So I'm going to put it up, and I'm going to read it for her, because that's what I got to do. Okay, so here we go. This piece is called As Soft and Light as a Butterfly's Flight by Naomi Sarah. I love you, you said. I love you too, I replied. Then the words died, too tired, too used, too insignificantly light. They fused and disappeared into night. If only I'd been a little more demanding, a little more commanding, then perhaps you'd have asked me, how can I love thee instead? For I desperately wished for your lingering kiss that would uplift my soul in the depths of the night as the wind in the folds of the kite. I hungered for your breath on my neck, as soft, as light, as a butterfly's flight, mixed with caresses so bold, they enveloped my whole within the sweetest delight. But most of all that night, I longed for words that would tell me not only you loved me, but heard me and saw me. Words thickened with desire that said, your smell entices me, your body excites me, the way it fits into mine so blissfully divine, there exists no place, no time. Oh, if I'd only been a little more demanding, a little more commanding, I'd have turned to you and bluntly said, ask me how. How can you love me instead? And the poem.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. And Dex, let's start with you.
Yeah, this is a beautiful write by Naomi, but with a very, you know, strong sense of longing also too. Sometimes it's like we would wish to be loved a certain way, but we struggle in person communicating the way that we would like to be loved. And communicating, or else maybe you're communicating to the wrong person, or maybe they're not picking up on the cues, but, it's hard to be very direct about a certain thing and not come off as a certain way. It's very beautifully expressed. The butterfly imagery fits very well with the overall tone of the poem and how it just kind of flutters along. It's a beautiful and terrific, right?
Well said. Thank you, Dick. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this is a beautiful and heartfelt write. It has a wonderful rhyme and flow to it. And I like how it's about, you know, that idea of not getting, as Dex were saying, that love that you're looking for, and questioning yourself, saying, you know, maybe if I had been more demanding, more commanding. But the thing is, you know, if somebody's laying next to you and ignoring you, you know, you're probably not going to get their attention by demanding and commanding. So it's one of those, like, damned if you do, damned if you don't type situations. And, yeah, this definitely pulls at the heartstrings and is beautifully written.
Well, thank you, Pam. And Colin, how about you?
Yeah, you know, what strikes me about this is that here we have basically some young lovers basically exchanging these you know these I love you kind of statements or whatever, but they're soft and light as a butterfly's flight, right? And how much, at least to me, the way I take the poem is how much is really behind that. And it seems to me that the narrator or the poet, right, wants to know that is that genuine, is that authentic? I mean, how deep does that can really go, right? Versus the you know, the kind of passionate, lustful, like, relationship that's going on here, you know, and what's tragic here is the narrator didn't push the issue, right? Wasn't demanding and wasn't commanding, right? And didn't try to find out the depth, right, or the sincerity, right, of the sentiment, and the sentiment just wasn't there. You know, how can you love me instead, right? And that's really well done, because you have this refrain, right, which goes through the poem and drives the point home, and it's such a fundamental one. So I really enjoyed this. I thought this was really well done.
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much, Colin. And Jean, how about you?
No, I made it back just in time. My phone, every night, 45 minutes in, it hangs up, or an hour and 45 minutes, it hangs up on me. I thought it was an excellent write by Naomi. Emotions were well expressed. It was a lovely use of rhyme and meter. And I have to agree with Dex 100%. It was softly stated. And as you said, just like the fluttering of a butterfly, because it was so sweetly done. And I thought it was just beautiful work. So nice job, Naomi, and thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Jane. I'm going to hit the same role as Colin just hit on. That opening stanza kind of says quite a bit. I love you, you said. I love you too, I replied. Then the words died, too tired, too used, too insignificantly light, they fused and disappeared into the night. So the angle there, especially with the next, the refrain of, if I'd be a little more demanding, a little more commanding, then perhaps kind of offers up the note. They're both in the same bucket, so to speak. The what if walks on both angles. And what's supposed to be shared isn't being shared, because there's still that longing, and it's deeply sad in the meantime. So on the back end of this, she's questioning her own thought as to why am I still here, so to speak. Nicely done, Naomi. All right, Jane. We're back to you.
Okay. I have the next one for you, Rex. So whenever you're ready, this is Bob. War of the Words by Mr. M.
War of the Words by Mr. M. Words have been my joy and my niece. They depicted my struggles and inner abuse. They helped express the war within, narrating a battle beneath my skin. For years I've been the messenger of woe. I have expressed sorrow in every way that I know. I have rhymed and I have used prose, describing my sadness as it painfully grows. I have told of my anger, screamed of my rage, bleeding my soul upon many a page. You have learned of my love, learned of my loss. My heart was without,
a line to cross. I bore my soul, letting my passions be heard, capturing minds and hearts within each word. All this I have done, but maybe in vain, for a select few can say they know my pain. My pain is not theirs, their pain is their own, but still it is good to know that we are not alone. But though you have seen these words that I wrote, I want you to make a mental note. You can judge or love or know my poetry, but that does not mean that you will ever know me. And poem. All right, Jean, let me start with you.
I knew you were going to do that. I just knew it. I think this is an excellent piece by Robert. Just, you know, a great write as always. I was up there. I was trying to find a stanza that I wanted to pull on. But, you know, each one is so standalone in the message. You know, my pain is not theirs. Their pain is their own. But still, it is good to know that we are not alone. But though you have seen these words that I wrote, I want you to make a mental note. You can judge or love or know my poetry, but that does not mean that you will ever know me. Just really well done. You know, Robert's just an excellent poet, and, you know, I like his work very much. So great job, and thanks for sharing with us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jean. And Colin, how about you?
Yeah, I think this is, you know, gets to an interesting issue with writers and poets and artists in general, is that, you know, they want to express themselves, and they certainly want to express themselves poetically or artistically, but they're also a bit worried, right, about how they're going to be judged or how they're going to be viewed, right, about from, you know, people that are close to them. And it seems here that the narrator is reluctant and yet wants to express himself, but there's this push and pull, right, this conflict, right, between the people that are close to him and the artistry that he wants to convey. And this authenticity, right, that comes out in his work. And it's definitely, I can relate to that, right? I mean, you can definitely feel that. But what's interesting is that last line, right? You can judge or love and know my poetry, but it doesn't mean you'll ever know me, right? So there seems to be this division or this barrier between poet and person or this kind of persona. Right, that the writer isn't the real person, which you know, sort of very interesting kind of twist at the end of this.
Excellent. Thank you, Colin. Pam, how about you?
Well, great read there, Rex. And this is a beautiful rhyming poem. I like how, you know, it's all about how a person puts themselves in their poetry, pours their emotion out into their poetry, but only so much, and you know, hold some back. And there's a definite bite in the idea of the end lines. But though you have seen these words that I wrote, I want you to take a mental note. You can judge or love or know my poetry, but that does not mean that you will ever know me. You know, just really that whole idea of keeping so much, you know, certain parts of yourself back. So excellent night and very well done.
Thank you, Kingham. And Dex, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with Colin kind of talking about, you know, those close, and it's kind of like why I really enjoy writing on here as an alias, because, you know, people close to me might misconstrue poems that I write. You know, a lot of the characters maybe hold that I write about, or a lot of the stories I write about might have a piece of myself within it. A lot of the pieces that I write about myself are only a piece of me, though. You know, it's maybe what I'm feeling that day. Sadness, you know, he writes about sadness and rage. You're only seeing what I choose to show. And you know, you can't be judged strictly on one poem. You can't be judged strictly on words. It's also not upon anybody else to be able to judge me. These are just expressions. These are just an expressive. This is how I choose to express myself. Much like nowadays, what's happening with kids' clothing or any other things. This is how I choose to express myself. So, very well done.
That's excellent there, Dex. Thank you very much. There's a couple of things in here that offers up the ease to expression. The words have been my joy and my noose. They had depicted my struggles and inner abuse. And then, for years I've been the messenger of woe. I have expressed sorrow in every way that I know. I have rhymed and I have used prose, describing my sadness as it painfully goes. With those two stanzas alone, he offers up the idea of that which he pours forth. The blood, the sweat, the tears, the pain and the anger, and that which he feels deepest to the page. And the back end that you can judge will ever know my poetry, but that does not mean that you will ever know me. It hits that notion, hey, I can share, but don't pretend that you understand me in that way, because it bites on that notion that everybody can actually hit upon, is do you ever really know another person? No. You can't get into their skin. You can't get into their mind. You get into their words, and you can offer up thoughts on that, but that's as far as it goes. You can't sit there and say, I've walked a mile in your shoes, because it's untrue. Nicely done, Robert. Thank you very much. All right, Jane. Where have I got to you?
Okay. For my last magic trick for the night, and that
is pull a rabbit out of my hand.
Like that, something like that. Absolutely. The last piece for tonight is going to be by Frank, Poetic Picasso, and I have quite a few carryovers, so I'll try and give a rundown of that. So here
hey, Naomi's offering squirrel ragu.
This is called A Token of the Harbingers by Poetic Picasso. So, here we go.
I saw the morning swans moving slowly through the water with effortless grace, and the nimble children playing in the pretty park, memories of the days of a period of innocence. A glimpse of happiness I once had shared ere, riding the carousel of the magical dreams, during the sweet sounds of a soothing springtime, when I had danced upon the clouds so lightly. I knew of an angel that had witnessed my birth, whose pulchritudinous pinions were empyrean, and his spirit was made from the divine breath, solely that from which guardian angels are born. He taught me to fly and soar in my imagination, to discover the world of the dreamers of hope, and aspire the kingdom of the noble men of valor, where the cadent heroes of immortality ever dwell. I swear that he was an angel like no other being, for his halo was resplendent in preternaturan form, and he had glided upon the winds and wilken high above. His words were the dulcet tone of the lyrical notes. The years have passed, and I still can see him with the beauty of ancient winds of other time, when the countless days and nights become the revelation of the moment of keepsake thy treasure. Laughing, crying, smiling, and singing old songs, and I know always that he is this angel of mine, the ethereal spirit of a glow from the moonlight moon, flying away to the unique place of memorable dreams.
Wow.
I reach the heavens of the luminous bloom and discover the garden of the immortal ones with a sempiternal gaiety of their colorful guises, a token of the harbingers of love and devotement. I shall reach the heavens. Oh, I shall reach the heavens. I shall reach the heavens.
Wonderful read, Frank. Thank you very much for the sound clap. It is greatly appreciated. Pam, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, this is beautifully written and read. I like how it has that epic and mythological feel, but is a tribute to fatherhood and how a father can be both an angel and a hero. I really like the years have passed, and I still can see him with the beauty of aging winds of father time. The idea of an elderly parent who has passed on and your memories of them. And I also really like that I knew of an angel that had witnessed my birth, who, you know, were Empyrean, and his spirit was made from the divine breath. It's a beautiful, heartfelt tribute to how much a father can mean to somebody. So, wonderfully written.
Thank you, ma'am. And Colin, how about you?
Yeah, add to that, I think, again, we have this kind of Wordsworthian pastoral quality to this, right? That the narrator sees, you know, the joyous nature of childlike immersion in nature and you know, these kind of angelic influences, right? You know, to trailing clouds of glory, and you know, do we come, you know, into the world, and which I think is done very well here with some rich and you know, compelling pastoral imagery.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Colin. Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was beautiful work. Just really, I go getting distracted again. I think there were shiny things around. But I said it was loaded with beautiful imagery, and it was a fabulous tribute to Father's Day thoughts. And, you know, very much enjoyed the piece. So excellent work, Frank, and thanks so much for sharing with us. Yeah, it's a great piece.
Thank you, Jean. And Dex, how about you?
I think that this was a piece about very much about being kind of in tune and recognizing maybe what's not black and white, recognizing gifts and recognizing familiarity in things that are happening around you that you can maybe recognize a father that's passed on. You can recognize, could be about God as the father. It could be about the universe or a spiritual sense about the father. But you recognize something looking out for you in that's happening within nature. And I thought that this was a great write about that.
Nice, Dex. Thank you very much. I got the appearance of the thought of a child who got a little glimpse of what was, because he hits on a glimpse of happiness I once had shared here, riding the carousel of the magical dream during the sweet sound of a soothing springtime where I danced upon clouds so lightly. There's an essence of that with the next thing, the angel witnesses birth. So I'm figuring the child has lost his father, yet that still lingers, because he hits on again, he taught me to fly and soar in my imagination to govern the world of dreamish hope. And then there was the years have passed, and I still see him. So there's that note of him acting as that guardian angel that he puts in here. So that sort of a guardian angel hits me with the notion of someone who's passed on and still looks on, and he knows he's there because he sees and understands what it is, because he hits on that notion of for his halo was resplendent and a preternatural in preternatural form, and he had glided upon the winsome rock and high above. His words were the dulcet tone of the lyrical notes, and there is that idea right there. This his father left him early, still watches over him in his growth in the years moving on, and that note to the end, I shall reach the heavens, hits on that idea. I'll be joining you one day. Thank you, Frank. All right, Jean, we're back to you for a closing note.
Well, you know, we're not on the air, so what I can say is we have Part Center, Part Sane at 12:30. I'm sure Faziana and Babu would be happy to have you join in if you're free and available. And I want to thank everyone who called in tonight. Colin, thanks for calling in and hanging out all night. Dexter, thank you. Pam, thank you as well. Naomi, thanks for trying a couple times. It was a great night tonight. Yeah, I wasn't too sure what was going to happen because of the situation with the messages over on AP, but, you know, I guess we stuck it out just long enough to wait for them to fix it. So, you know, in that respect, it all worked out well. And Rex, thanks as always for being my co-host and hanging out with me and putting up with my silly muting myself. I did get it out of the way really fine.
Boy, that came out wrong.
What? I don't know what I said, so maybe I better be quiet.
Amusing yourself.
That was terrible. I was muted from the very beginning of the show. That was awful. Very awful. Oh,
well,
God.
You started early, didn't do it again.
Thank God. Thank God.